We're going to go right into our next speaker. And there's a story, some of you may know it, but I'm going to tell it again for those that haven't heard it. I was with Steve Goyette, our favorite programmer, one of our favorite programmers. And we were in New Orleans driving around, and we were listening to the jazz radio station. And there's this guy on, they were interviewing him. And, you know, I was sort of listening with half an ear. And then all of a sudden, he was saying things that were just exploding in my head. And let me give you some background. The first money I ever made was producing concerts. You know, getting just kind of like this, seats, tickets, getting people in the... And it's the one of the best business trainings you can ever have because you've got to do it. Like when it's, let's say this concert's at 8 and you haven't sold any seats. Can you make believe that you sold seats? Can you go to a meeting with a bunch of memos and do some flim-flam and pretend the audience is full? You can't. You also have to deal with weird problems, sound not working, musicians kind of, maybe some of them, not all of them, but some of them kind of erratic, you know, for, imagine that. Everything's now. Everything's now. And from that experience, I learned this thing that's hard to teach, and that thing is the word energy, okay? There's a certain amount of energy you need to put into things for them to work. And if there's one problem that I see people having, beginners and, you know, me sometimes, is we look at something we kind of want to do and we sort of do it. And we don't put the energy that's required to make it happen. And one thing about music promotion is you better come with buckets and buckets of energy. And what Martin is going to talk about, even though his business has to do with music promotion, concerts, CDs, and all that kind of thing, is 100 million percent applicable to any project that you're trying to do. Because it's all about what? It's all about promotion. It's all about taking something that's not well known and making it famous, and taking something that's sort of well known and making it glamorous. We're all in that business. And I was so blown away by this call, by this interview, I had to pull the car over. I don't know, Steve here? He can confirm that. You know, right? When I pulled the car over, I said, wait, you know, we're sitting in this car, and you know, we're not going anywhere, and I'm just listening. We went to hear Martin speak. We were lucky enough to get him to go out to dinner with us, and I thought, I've got to bring Martin Atkins. Some of you are, how many people are very familiar with the music scene and know Martin's got a legendary background as a musician? We're not going to talk about that tonight. We're just going to talk about music. He may talk about it a little bit, which is fine. And you ready to?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nearly ready. Okay. I guess this is going to be dramatic. This is your business. He's going to talk about the rock and roll business. I swear, this is your business. Get what he has to say. And I'll just let you be. So. Okay.
Thank you. I'm ready. I'm all over it. Organization is the key. And a place to put your gum. Thanks, Ken. So welcome to Chicago. I'm going to just blast through this. Something I tell... Something I tell students all over the world is to pay attention to the source of any information that you're given. Right? It seems like a no-brainer. If you go to buy a car... you don't listen to anything the used car salesman says, right? Oh, really? You think, yep. You don't pay any attention. Outside of that, especially in the music business, people in bands, artists, students, just take everything in. There aren't as many people questioning stuff as there used to be, seems to me. So, having said that, that's why I have this stuff up here. It's like my last 25 years in 45 seconds or something. From my time with Public Image Limited, featuring Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols, to the Suicide Girls, from American Bandstand.
Hello, what's your name, please?
Martin Atkins.
Welcome.
To MTV. From Nine Inch Nails to Pigface. Since 1979, I've been at the cutting edge, the forefront of dangerous, innovative, alternative music. I've spent the last 2 years working on my book, Tour Smart. It has contributions from Henry Rollins, Cynthia Plasticaster, Lee Popa, who does sound for Lollapalooza and the NBA, managers, agents, guitar techs, idiots, drug addicts, and some pretty cool people, along with 30 years of my experience and theories explained. Okay, so that's my stuff. I'm in the music business, playing drums since I was 9, drinking and backing strippers since I was 11. My record label is 20 years old. I don't know, next month. We've released 300 or 400 albums. I have my own studio. I wouldn't want my own studio without a label, and I wouldn't want the label without a studio. I own a publishing company that controls 3,000 of the 10,000 songs that we have. Right, so I can license music for film like that. What else do I do? Oh, I wrote a book, I teach, I play drums, I have a sound library through a company called Cakewalk. Maybe that's it. That's it. That's me. I have 3 boys, and my wife's pregnant. So, yeah, I think that's probably the thing that I'm best at, is shagging. And but my 10-year-old, who just turned 11 last week, is like, when he found out that his mom is pregnant, he pulled me aside discreetly and said, you know, Dad, the stuff you can do. Yeah. So that's the person who stands before you, about to give you strategies for success. Yeah, right. Is anybody here a rock star? Do we have any rock stars here? Yeah, come on. Yeah. Well, that's great, because Jimmy John's Sandwich Shop is looking for rock stars. I don't know why I did that. Actually, I went out to LA and did this for a band in their apartment, which was really nice of me. And I bought pizza, which was ridiculously nice of me. But then I kind of kicked them in the nuts with this. They were living in LA. They thought they were rock stars. And I just kind of chopped their legs out from under them. And I say that I did it to question the nature of rock stars and charisma and the validity of fame in this day and age. But really, I did it because I'm a prick. So anyway, strategies for success. The old model in the music business and everywhere is dead. Radiohead, God bless them, started giving away their music. I don't know, was it October of last year? And people in the music business are like, well, yeah, well, that's all right for them because they're Radiohead. I'm like, well, why isn't it all right for you? You have to respond. If Radiohead are giving away their album, what's your fucking album worth? Right? Because I think theirs might sound a little bit better. You know? You know? So, the world that I live in is like, okay, Radiohead's album is free. Here's mine with $5 inserted into it. What's after that? Okay, well, here's mine with $7. Okay, Here's mine with a box of laundry detergent. Ah, see, that's not worth as much as the $7. But I'm going to come to your house and do your fucking laundry if you buy this album. That's the way the music business is going. But there are people in the music business who are still like, yeah, but we've got to get it back. We've got to get things back to the way things were. We're not putting the lid back on that jar of cocaine freaked out worms. We're just not going to. Anyway, strategies for success. Number one. That's strategy. People have strategies for all kinds of things. Thanksgiving dinner. Okay, put those people down at that side of the table. I'm not dealing with them. Well, oh, we've got some vegetarians. Put those at the little table in the other room. You know? People have strategies for all kinds of things, except art and music, and it seems, you know. And a little point, I don't know if you want to write this one down. Furry dice hanging from the rearview mirror, it's not a strategy. It's not a strategy. Here's a good one. Never take your country to war unless you're certain of the outcome. I love going to schools around the country. Now, I don't know what band this guy was in. Bass player or something. But when I read that, I'm like, well, you know, it's easy for you to say, Mr. Sun, you know, but I'm in the music business, and it's 2008. How on earth can we be sure of anything? But you can be, and you have to be, because it's warfare. Music, touring, 2008, it's warfare. You might start off loving music and kind of liking the people you're in a band with for a while. There are all kinds of things that are victims of the warfare of touring. Your relationship, your love of music, your tolerance of your fellow band members, your credit, your partner's credit. I was on a tour, 3 buses, 36 people. We had an outbreak of spinal meningitis. Yeah, I mean, that's serious stuff. And it was horrible because it was right before we crossed the border into Montreal. That's Murphy's Law. Was it the last night of the tour? So everybody could just go home on their own dime with spinal meningitis? No, it was in the middle of the tour, the night before the border crossing into Montreal. So it wasn't really the situation in which I wanted to be sitting across from a pretty nurse speaking French to me. You know, it was kind of horrible. Nobody died on that tour. But when I was telling that story, I was out to dinner with the guys from Jägermeister. I'm like, so I win. Spinal meningitis on the road. And somebody kicks me under the table. That's one of the other guys at dinner was in a band called Drowning Pool. And their singer died in the bus. So they win. But it's really serious stuff. All of this stuff is really serious. You have to stop blaming anybody for anything. You just have to. You can. God knows, in the music business, you can. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if your manager fucked up or he's on drugs or drunk, which is kind of redundant. Or your agent booked you in the wrong club on the wrong night. Or the right club on the wrong night. Or the wrong club on the right night. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that the guy producing your album, two songs in, is like, wow, can you hear it? No. Bagpipes. Track two, bagpipes. Okay. He's producing your album, so the next thing you know, you've got bagpipes on track two. And because it seems like a good idea, like the bagpipe players are here, you've got the microphone set up, you know, he's put his kilt on. Have him play track five. Right? It makes perfect sense. Except now you have bagpipes on two songs on your album. Maybe your manager should have policed that in some way. Maybe your record label should have fired the producer, or maybe they could have sent posters out to the venue in time. It doesn't matter who you can legitimately blame. It is going to be you standing on stage on a Tuesday night playing to two people. And the way Murphy's Law works is one of those people will be some crazy fuck in a kilt. Bagpipes! Hey, here we go! The other person, inexplicably in Toledo, Ohio on a Tuesday night, will be the music critic for the New York Times. That's just the way it works. And the sound you hear, other than the feedback, because the monitor guy's crap and blame, whatever. The sound you can hear, that's your career rolling off the front of the stage into a shredder and then bursting into flames and flushing itself down the toilet. So it doesn't matter that you could get off on the phone and go, there's a problem with the posters, this is the wrong venue. Heads will roll, we'll have a meeting when I get... It doesn't matter. You've already paid the price. And if you understand the price that you're going to pay, you just have to take responsibility for all of it. Okay? Yes. Great. Aim low, get high. Interesting to note that most students around the world just look at me puzzled, like, is he talking about drugs? You guys are like, yeah, right, let's go. This is my way of marketing an idea, which is just be humble. That's it. It's also a great t-shirt, and my son was sent home from school for wearing it. But how can you become U2 and play? They played like next door, where Rosemont, Allstate Arena, they keep changing the names of these places. But how can you play in a stadium? Well, don't know. I don't have a clue. But I saw U2 play to 17 people at a club in London. It was in 1979, a club called the Rock Garden. And I was drunk, and I was an asshole, and I just joined Public Image Limited. And I left early. I'm like, oh, this is crap. This band is going nowhere. Yeah, that's who's giving you a little bit of advice right now. And look at them now. Front cover of Time magazine, smoking Nelson Mandela's weed. But they played to 17 people, right? And I was lucky enough to be at the Great Wall of China at the end of 2006. And there's an interesting parallel, I think. On the one hand, the Great Wall of China, it's one of the seven wonders of the world. It's spiritually amazing. It's this, I don't know, it's a humbling experience to be there. It's just, it's one of those things, right? On the other hand, it's a fucking pile of bricks. It's a really big, long pile of bricks. It's just a pile of bricks. And that's all U2's career is, really. Just a pile of bricks. I don't know how I can advise somebody to become U2 and play stadiums. The same way I don't really know how I could advise somebody to build the Great Wall of China. But if you just start stacking the bricks, At the end of a week, well, you're kind of nowhere. But at the end of a couple of months, you've got a substantial pile of bricks. You have more bricks than the people who are standing around going, well, it's amazing. Right? And realizing that, I think the problem with these spiritual experiences is they dissuade us from just trying and just putting five bricks on top of another five bricks. Right? And in the light of that kind of success, the Great Wall of China or U2 playing a stadium, it just seems meaningless to go to Toledo and play to 10 people. But that's how U2 got to play a stadium. They played to 10 people. And they played to 20. Then they played to 40. Then 80. Then 160. Then they went kind of country and western, fucked up, and played to 7. But then built it back up again. Okay. I advise students to expand themselves as they try and expand their fan base. And in these times, I think it's pretty good advice. You know, you don't have to furiously write all of this down. It's all available in my book. I'm not trying to sell books. I'm trying to just save your arthritic hands. I only brought three with me anyway. So, I was in Indianapolis and met this engineer who was up for a job at a studio. Pretty tough these days. There aren't that many studios. He was up against five other engineers to get a job in the studio. A studio called the Pop Machine. Like, what a great name for a studio. Do you have a pop machine? No. Well, if you don't have a pop machine, how could you sell your own brand of pop called Pop Machine Pop, which is cooler than a business card, and bands will come in and they'll drink it and then they'll buy a six-pack to take home to wherever they're from and it'll be great anyway. There was one skill that he had that got him the job as engineer at the studio over the other five engineers. $20, if anybody can tell me what it is.
He had a website.
Good coffee was a good one. I mean, not there's no such thing as a wrong answer, except those two. What?
He was a good janitor.
He was a good what? Janitor. The reason I like the good coffee one, there's a very famous producer right now called Flood. And he's called Flood because he used to fill the teacups in the studio all the way to the top. So they called him Flood. I thought it was like some, like, wow, the low end is amazing and it makes you feel like... No, it just, the fucking cups of tea were filled. There was another guy working in the same studio called Drought. You never hear of that guy, do you? But it's the same kind of deal. The skill that got this guy the job was aquarium management. Right? It's pretty wild, isn't it? So, I tell people that. Like, you know, because people look at a certain field and they want to accumulate skills within that field. And it's probably something outside of that field that's going to help you. I was at the Belmont School in Nashville. And there was a panel. I was there as a teacher. And there was a panel with a very famous producer, engineer, called George Massenberg. And a woman who worked on Shania Twain's last album. And a guy who's working on Megadeth's last album. Something like that. And the panel was asked by a group of teachers what they could tell their students to do to be more skillful at working in a studio. And the guy working with Megadeth said, unhesitatingly, have them work in a pizza parlor on a Saturday night. And I'm like, oh! Right. I thought that was brilliant, because most of my time in studios with bands has been spent playing interference between the coked-up, drunk lead guitarist, bass player, singer, trying to make sure that they weren't going to hit the engineer upside the head with a glass ashtray. So working in a pizza parlor on a Saturday night would get you the skill of dealing with groups of people, drunken idiots, whatever. Great skill to have. Plus, important for working in the music business, you could get used to spending time around large amounts of cheese. You know? So, I met a guy in Cologne, same kind of thing. He became the go-to guy as an engineer producer for any band coming out of Japan. Because he had like 30 words of Japanese. It's like, oh, you've got to call that guy. We don't need to. And all he could say was, your guitars are out of tune, your singer's crap, the drummer is rubbish. I mean, I don't know what his Japanese vocabulary was, but you don't need that much of a vocabulary to survive a recording session in the studio. Just that skill, he became the guy. You want to be a heavy metal guitar tech? I know you do. I'm sure there's an amazing guitar tech out there that all the guitar techs look up to. There he is. Shh. But heavy metal bands spend a lot of time in South America. I don't know how they do it. I haven't been there, but whatever. They're always down there. So you could just be a mediocre guitar tech. But get a little bit of Portuguese or Spanish. So when amazing guitar tech is running around like, oh, the guitarist, or how can I say, the guitarist, his amplifier's blown up. Help, help, help. There's nothing he can do. Here you are, mediocre guitar tech. Oh, solamente. Boo, 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 boo. You're better in that circumstance than the amazing guitar tech. I think this is a time of, you know, my dad used to say to me, and my granddad used to say, jack of all trades, master of none. Well, okay, fine. I hope I'm not the master of a trade that bursts into flames and becomes obsolete overnight. So what career did you choose then, grandson? Cassette tape manufacturing. I nearly crashed a few weeks ago. I was watching these two guys up doing a billboard. And this one guy had the poster, his arm inside the poster. It was kind of windy. And he was unrolling the poster. And with the other hand, with a broom, he was like pasting the thing. And this other guy was watching him like The Apprentice. I'm like, give it up. What are you doing? Obsolete. You know, it used to be, someone would say, we're unveiling a new poster campaign across the country. It's going to take 2 months. We're going to need our top 10 guys. Yeah, oh, this is a problem. Cha-ching. Now it's just some guy in New York. Okay, change all the billboards. Yeah, okay, let's go and have lunch. So, the interesting thing about accumulating these skills is if you accumulate 10, they don't all have to be 4-year degree courses. They could be aquarium management, you know, 15 minutes on the internet, 25 words of recording studio Japanese, whatever. But once you have 10 skills, when one of them starts to like smolder, burst into flames, or just disappear completely, okay, you've still got 9. Right, so something's going to be going on while you watch that 10th skill smolder, crash, burn, disappear. And if you've accumulated 10 skills, you've accumulated the skill of accumulating skills. So it's like 10% more work to acquire the 11th one. If you only have one skill, it's 100% more work to acquire another skill. Plus, you're freaking out because you only have one skill and it's on fire. right? Some specifics. Oh. I asked my label manager, what would happen if we drew a line from Minneapolis to Texas? How many of the 100 largest markets, largest cities by Nielsen SoundScan, are west of that line? I love this stuff. He says he's American, and he tells me, oh, it's about 50-50. I'm like, it's not 50-50.
He lives in LA.
So we start arguing. I said, do you just want to do it? And it turns out there's only 16 or 17 of those top 100 markets west of that line. What else is west of that line? There's 900-mile drives. This is a strategy. I had a band in Chicago. I'm like, what's your strategy? We're going to L.A. We're going to play the Whiskey a Go-Go. Like, all right, this is good. I can help you. Because I used to buy my speed from the cocktail waitresses at the bar next door to the Whiskey. And I can tell you, it's not the place you think it is. Their PA system is crap. It's kind of a pay-to-play venue. You don't need to go there. But they did. So they've got 800-900-mile drives. And let's think this through. So let's say they get to Denver on time. Here we go. Yeah. Amazing. Blue lights and the guitar amplifier. What happens next? Maybe there's 20 amazingly hot girls or guys, whatever floats your boat, down the front. Maybe it's one of those shows where people are throwing underwear at you. Or somebody hands you a note. I'd throw my underwear at you if I was wearing any. Yeah, we've all been there. We don't need to go. We don't need to go over it. I don't want to bore you with those stories. What happens next? Nothing. Because you're already late for Salt Lake City. And if touring America, breaking a band, is about interacting with people, one person at a time, and I don't mean shagging people, although there's a strategy. 10 years down the line, there's kids all over the country inexplicably drawn to your music. But I'm just talking about somebody offering you hospitality and you accepting it, right? That forms a bond. Listening to somebody's appalling record collection at 4 a.m. Exchanging emails, just talking to somebody and, yeah, shagging them, whatever. If that's what it's about, and it is, and if it isn't, somebody needs to tell Barack and Hillary, because those guys are just going round and round till they can't talk anymore, touching people, sometimes not in a good way. But that's what they're doing. If there was an easier way, they'd be doing it. If there was an easier way for Hillary Clinton, she'd be doing it. She sure as hell has the money. Like, okay, we're launching the MySpace campaign now. Okay, great, how's it going? So, if that's what it's about, you're not doing much of that west of that line. East of that line, well, look at that. Some of those cities, you can skateboard between them. I mean, that's how close they are. These drives are like 100 miles, 180 miles. The kind of drives I do where I'm like texting somebody, driving with my elbows, filming my video blog, reflection of myself in the rearview mirror, eating a banana. Hilarious stuff. When you stay east of that line, if you're in the wrong venue, great. You can arrive early to a city. Go to the right venue. Meet the promoter. Go to a Starbucks. Drop off some CDs and postcards at a tattoo parlor. Find the other Starbucks. Go to a record store, a clothing store, a tattoo parlor, a hairdressing salon, or another Starbucks. And let people know that you're in town. Right? You can meet people. You can repair the instruments that you broke the night before. You can get to the venue early, sound check, sound good, shower, smell good, be good, play good, and hang around afterwards. Boom. The interesting part about this strategy is, having been in the music business since 1979, nobody ever suggested stay east of that line as a strategy to me. All the suggestions of strategy have involved an ex-member of Pink Floyd, $200,000, and recording an album in a remote, exotic location where if something goes wrong, you can't fix it. Interesting. Another reason to stay east of that line, oh, look at this, another victim of the gas, here's my PowerPoint. $3.51 a gallon. Mark my words. Right. So this is like 4 weeks ago, of course. Right. So when you're driving around the West Coast, you're driving 800 or 900 miles, where gas is the most expensive. If you're in a bus, if you're in a band and you're lucky enough to be in a bus, or you're Hillary Clinton and you're in a bus, what happens with a 700 or 800 mile drive is the bus driver's like, oh, this is going to take a long time. But it isn't, because they just put their foot down. So whereas a bus gets 9 or 10 miles to the gallon at 55, I don't know what miles per gallon it gets at 95 miles. It's like you have to fill up before you leave the gas station. And this is what happens when you arrive for a conference in Oslo 2 days early. Another reason not to play west of that line, this is population density. There's nobody there. There's nobody there. Oh, and something my label manager did this, and I was kind of pissed off with him because it took a day and a half. And then I saw it and I thought, all right, you know, it's cool, except the van's going backwards. So that's your West Coast tour. This is what happens if a band stays closer to home. Boom. And that's such a great visual representation of that I excused him. And that's what it looks like. 14 days. You head west, 6,000 miles. You head east, you stay closer to home, it's 2,000 miles. The $800 of tour support that the record label that doesn't exist and wouldn't sign you wouldn't give you, well, you just got that back for yourself. There's your $800. You spend 114 hours in a van heading west, or 40 hours staying closer to home. So it turns out that Cher was right. You can turn back time. 2, 3, if I... Sorry. And if this is just a bunch of bricks in the wall, and it is, there's 3 more shows. And actually, I don't think a show is a brick in the wall. Selling a shirt or a CD is a brick in the wall. You're going to do way more of it. You could use the 5-pointed star inward facing crush technique. You're smart guys. We don't need to go over that. Actually, it's up on the internet. There's a movie of it. It's just that. If you have an important event, let's suspend all fucking intelligence and say it's in Cincinnati for some reason. Like one of those events where, I don't know, there's a radio DJ there or some journalists there or some people from a company that they're going to be there. And if you bomb, it's really going to have some nasty long-term repercussions, right? Cleveland, Ohio has a very popular magazine called Alternative Press based there. So if you have a bad show there, it's more than just a bad show. Well, you don't go there. You go to a bunch of places around there. And you accumulate information on people. And then you announce your Cincinnati show. Right? You play 5 places that are a reasonable distance for your fans to travel. Distance is different across the states. Manhattan, the furthest somebody will travel for a show, 14 blocks. Right? Where are you? Yeah. Well, no, we haven't been down there in a while. Okay. Salt Lake City, Utah, people will travel for 5 hours to see a show. Or using their units of time and distance measurement, 2 six-packs. Distance is different. 80 miles from Rochester to Buffalo, it's an hour. 80 miles from San Diego to L.A., very different, right? Because of traffic. So whatever this is, you choose these places wisely so they will affect a positive outcome at your important show in Cincinnati. And then you don't announce the show and just hope that these people show up. You monitor your traffic. You incentivize them. Hey, you know the live album we did in Germany? And if you don't have a live album from Germany, make it up. Go and record one down the street somewhere and add in a bunch of German screaming and, you know, whatever. There's no such thing as a lie, really, you know. You incentivize people. People might say, great, I'll buy that album on the internet. You can't buy it on the internet. We'll have it at the show with the T-shirt. Right? It's carrot, stick, carrot. Baseball bat, carrot. If you stick a fork in somebody's eye, never twist it. Just pull it straight. Pull it straight out. If there are people in Dayton who are on the board saying, I want to go. I don't have a vehicle. I don't have any gas money. Send them some gas money. Because that's just money. I don't mean, it's just money. Right? I'm a father of three and my wife's pregnant. I happen to think that these signature soups at Dominic's are too fucking expensive. What are they, $5 for... Anyway. But for our purposes, for the music business, for promoting a product, it's just money. If the only thing between five people in Dayton getting to your show in Cincinnati is $10 worth of gas, give them the money. If you have momentum, you can always get money. Right? If you have money, you can't always get momentum. Ask EMI, RCA. Here's another strategy for you. Don't be an asshole. Because apart from anything else, and I've been an asshole, I've been a drunken asshole. It's always going to be to the person who's going to do you the most karmic damage, either within an hour or 15 years down the line. You know? I think I put my fist through a wall in a dressing room 20 years ago when I was drinking heavily. And the guy in the dressing room was Kevin Lyman. And at that point, he was just putting beers in the dressing room. Now, he invented a tour called the Warped Tour, which is the biggest, I think, national tour of America. And we're friends again, but it took a while. And I'm sure there's lots of instances like that that I don't actually know the guy I was an asshole to. Just not worth it. Forget New York City and Boise and L.A. Move to Boise. It's just big fish, small pond. Is there an equivalent strategy? Is that like a parallel strategy? Well, here's the reason. In New York City, nobody cares. Nobody cares about anything. They're too busy with their thing to worry about yours. So you don't have to go there and get chewed up and spit out to find that out. You could just buy a copy of the Village Voice or come to another one of my events and you could look at this stuff. There are 1,272 reasons why nobody in New York is going to pay attention to your event. Who wants to go up against Amy Mann, for instance? In LA, there are 1,700 events a week. So go somewhere else, like Boise, where there are 9, 10, or 11 events a week. Do something there, and then translate that into a larger market. Make sense? All of these rules, my little rules, they're flexible. You don't go west of that line. But our band is getting airplay in California. Well, go west of that line. Right? They're just little rules. Have a reason. Have a reason. And it's momentum that is king. And you pour gasoline on the sparks, not where you thought the sparks should be. If you pour gasoline where you were hoping to do something, you just have a pool of gasoline and a spark over there. I don't think it would be surprising anybody to let you know that Norway didn't figure into my plans. I was going to say in the first 5 years of promoting my book, but like ever. It's never figured in my plans. But some people in Norway called me up. We love the book. Come and talk to these black metal bands. Shit, all right, yeah. And then I Googled black metal bands at the airport. And when they're not burning churches, they're killing people. But it went pretty well, I guess. Nobody was injured during the performance. What?
Except for
Well, yeah. And they asked me back. So I went. And so I've been to Norway 3 times. I stumbled into a company that has $330 million to spend on a culture-based experiential economy in their city. And I'm happy to help them with that. I said, but you have to give me a building. Like, oh, I'm like, not a building to use for a while. I mean, you're giving me a fucking building. And they're showing me buildings when I go back. But if I was just like, Norway? No, we're doing Cleveland, Detroit. Well, if Detroit still exists, Chicago, right? Because people in the music business follow the same routing path that Ted Nugent did in 1982. It's like this built-in, New York, Boston, Buffalo, right? You just have to go where it's happening, or don't go where it isn't. And this would be a good time to mention, this kind of wraps up the first part. It's like a spiritual thing. It's like karmic. It's karmic, really. If you know, and I don't just mean like, yeah, Martin, we know. You have to know in your head and your heart that you're fucked. Not slightly fucked, crispy around the edges. Fucked. Then you're not. Right? It's beautiful. If you think that you're not, you are. Right? It's beautiful. I'm going to do it in like a little tapestry thing, like a Home Sweet Home thing. It's going to be... what a great idea for a graphic, if only I had... I'd ask my label manager to do it, but he'd like animate it. It would take him like 5. I've done the animation. If you can understand that you're fucked, then you're not. If you think that you're not, then you are. Love it. And I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. What is that in German? Wenn du weißt, dass du gefickt bist, bist du nicht gefickt. Wenn du glaubst, dass du es nicht bist, bist du gefickt. What a great idea for a t-shirt that I don't have. Technology 101. Right? Very important. You always have to be on the cutting edge of the newest innovations. Yeah, hello? Now, I'm in the middle of... I'm in the middle of something. Yeah, I'll call you right back. Yeah. Okay, ciao. Yeah. Always be on the cutting edge. You always need to do more than any sane person would ever do. You know, what was it? I have to say Mr. Kodak, because I don't know his first name. Steve Kodak. He stayed up for like 14 days in a row without showering, messing around with film. I'm sure people were like, you crazy bastard. What are you doing now? Oh, we're going to take pictures, are we? There's an earlier version of me. Well, this is going nowhere. You have to do way more, right? And economies, rules of business, don't apply. They don't apply. How does it make any sense that each Spice Girl got like $1 million a week? It's crazy. Here's something I picked up at a musical event called South by Southwest. There was a band playing on the street, which is great because most bands pay to be involved in it and then they play to nobody because there's 2,500 bands performing at South by Southwest. And I found this band on the street with their dogs. It's a good job it was in the open air because they smelled really bad. Not the dogs, the dogs smelled pretty good. But I see this. I'm like, wow, that's really interesting. Where'd you get these bags printed? You could kind of pass it around a little bit. How you doing, man? Where'd you get these bags printed? And they laughed. And showed me another one. I'm like, oh my God. They're sitting in the back of their van, typing on these bags. And it's kind of insane. Not just for the messages that, hi, I'm learning how to play the trumpet, I'm into group sex, can we stay at your house? Right? That wasn't me speaking. Now that's what they wrote in the... I don't need to stay at your house. I live here in Chicago. But the time it took them to do that, it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But it's the only thing that makes sense. You talk about marketing, frequency of impressions. Yeah, okay. What about the depth and strength of one impression? I own a record label. I bought those two crappy sounding, actually, CDs in typewritten bags for $10 a piece. I could have had them give me a box of 50. I bought them because I was intrigued. I've been all over the world telling people about this band that smells bad, sounds bad, but had a good idea. Right? So how does that work in terms of economy of effort? That's the only thing that makes sense. You have to make cool shit. I have a band called The Damage Manual, and I designed the CD. It's plastic basement. Oh, you see? I knew we wouldn't plug the power in. Oh. Diddle it. You've got 15 seconds to plug in the... Oh, drama. That's plastic basement flooring that we imported from Canada. And then it turned out they couldn't cut it to the right size or they wouldn't. It's just a nightmare that we don't need to go into. Did it make any sense? Of course. I want to live on the surface of that album. It intrigues me and I made it. Right? I stand here like, oh. I wonder what the music is like on there. And I know, because I made the music that's on there. You have to do something to translate the vibe into a solid object. Vibes are like incense, right? And it's no this is depth, right? It's no longer about selling 1,000 CDs or 1,000 units to 1,000 people. It's about selling 10 different things to 100 people. Still 1,000 units, but you have to work 10 times harder to get that loyalty from them. So I was in China at the end of 06, and I did a red vinyl 7-inch. It's just a red vinyl 7-inch, but they're numbered. And I negotiated a deal for a bunch of posters. Those are authentic posters from the Cultural Revolution. So, of course, this 7-inch plays at 45 Cultural Revolutions a minute. Thank you. So there's 45 different 7-inch singles. So we're wondering, how are we going to sell our music? How are we going to sell this? Well, is that music? I don't know. Don't care. It's a poster from the Cultural Revolution. That's art. It's an object. It's signed and numbered. And now we're in art gallery world. Then I recorded all these bands over there. And we did a compilation of bands called Look Directly Into the Sun, because if you've been to Beijing, you can. It's like LA in 83. Right? What? Yeah, the sun's over there somewhere. You see that? And this CD got great reviews on NPR, Mojo Magazine. So maybe this is $15. But we take $1.50 from the CD and I manufacture a T-shirt myself, or I have an intern do it. So now all of that is $15. It's kind of cooler. Instead of giving $1.50 discount on the CD, what's that? Now we're Best Buy or Amazon, because Amazon's going to sell it for $8.98. I don't know how they do that, but they do. So we've taken $1.50 from this, and I've invested that in a T-shirt. Now the shirt and the CD are $15. So is the CD $15 with a free shirt, or is the shirt $15 with a free CD, or are they $7.50 each? Don't know, don't care. And any time you introduce any of that, it's a good thing. So people might not want to buy the CD, but think $15 is perfectly reasonable for a T-shirt. And we take it a step further. People have laminated tour pass fetishes, right? I don't know if you... I'm going to save this one. I'm going to put it on my wall of passes, right? So I call the venue in Beijing. And I say, look, it's never going to happen, but I'm calling you just in case it does. Can I give away a free pass to your club? Yeah, okay. So that's what we did. It's good for one night's admission to the club. So that comes with the CD and the T-shirt. Is anybody going to fly? Oh, what a great deal. I'm flying to Beijing now. Free. It probably costs you 58 cents to get in. Oh, they might let you in for free anyway. But now we're just virtual fantasy travel agents. We're selling the idea that if you're ever in Beijing, stop on down, your family. And then the last Pig Face tour we did, we played to maybe 500 to 1,000 kids a night. Everybody had their own individual pass. Not because we needed it, because we wanted to be able to give them away to people. It's kind of fun to have a collection. Collect the set. You need to have more than one T-shirt design. I don't know who this would apply to. But you need the question to be not, would you like to buy a T-shirt? The question has to be, blocking the fire exit, which one of these shirts are you going to buy? That has to be the question. It's not about money. It's about maybe 5-10 more people every night have a shirt. They might not know who the hell they saw the night before. until they scrape the puke off the shirt. They were great. I do something called sublimating the band name. I make it not always about the band name. This is Sheep on Drugs. So we twisted up a sticker for them. A band from Chicago called The Countdown. It's the chorus of one of their songs. American Still Life on a Haynes 50-50. I Heart Damage, that's my band. The best-selling pig face shirt of all time. It doesn't say pig face. People who want to kick my ass buy that shirt on the way to the car park. Here's Sheep on Drugs again. Don't wear that when you're driving through Ohio. And the ability to screen print and express ideas. So Dunkin' Donuts has this American runs on Dunkin'. Like, no, it fucking doesn't. The logo for the damage manual is a reverse D, so I just chopped it up. 10 minutes later, I walked back into Dunkin' Donuts with the shirt. And this illustrates something that I like, which is when you do stuff, when you do more stuff, accidents happen. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But this feels like a kind of comment, a political comment. Yeah, it's just a fucking T-shirt. But it feels interesting and deeper than it was intended to be. It's nice to surprise yourself. So, there's no such thing as just art or just business. Nothing exists in a vacuum, except probably like 15 dimes, whatever. There's the business of art. The art of business. That's it. So, here's a poster I did. I bought some religious calendar blanks and I overprinted. So I did the black screen. I'm sure originally this would say Steve's Automotive, keeping the air in God's tires since 1980. Whatever. But I took these blanks, I screen printed them, and I signed and numbered them. So this is limited edition artwork for a poster. There are 10 different posters. There's only 20 of this particular poster. This is that scene from the Bible where the angel pushes the children off the cliff into the lake. But there's only 20 of those. There's 1,200 of these. You can find these on eBay for $12. This? It's not for sale. Which is art gallery speak. Make me an offer. Oh! What's not for sale? Oh, $200. You win. You got me there. Yeah, you got me with that one. Absolutely. So, here's more effort. I had to make another screen to work with that poster. Just more and more effort. But now, instead of sending a bunch of posters to a venue, we're sending an installation. What? Did we get the installation? What are you talking about? Oh, it's a bag of posters. Yeah, we got the poster. Now we're using art to gouge, leverage, elbow real estate in the most valuable piece of real estate in a venue where all the other posters are stuck up. And I would never tear down another band's posters in case they saw me. But I would never do that. It's really bad karma. But if the owner of a venue should decide to staple my cool, arty, limited edition, signed, numbered posters over another band's posters, so be it. Those lazy bastards could have done something interesting instead of going to Kinko's and running off some more posters, couldn't they? So then I take the Madonna image, I dot screen it, and this was the first scenery that I made that I knew I was going to cut up, stretch, and sell after the tour. Is that art or memorabilia? Don't know, don't care. That's what it looked like at the Vic Theater, I think, in Chicago. It's 30 feet high. It cost a couple of $100s to do it, you know. And we sell those panels. We sold them after the tour. We had people sign up. Please send me information. I'm interested. Should they become available, which we're going to sell it, but we pretended we didn't know. And now we sell them for $125 a piece. It's not about the money. It's about having that to give to people. So I did Man Cow in the Morning, radio talk show. I didn't take CDs. You can't give CDs to somebody in radio. Like, well, thanks a lot. I'll put that on the pile with the other 5,000 I got this morning. You take them some art. You take the music people art. You take the art people music. You take the music reviewer from the Chicago Tribune cookies. I don't know. Bake your next CD in a cake. You stand a better chance of being featured on the Morning Cookery Channel. Well, be careful when you take a bite out of this cake, because in the middle is some great music, and here they are, 2, 3, 4. It's not about the money. It's about making art, communicating. And so I did the China 7-inch. And then I did this. I need the printed bags, right? The typewritten bags from the Smelly Band. I need those back. I don't need this other stuff back. I did this. A scratch and sniff, thank you. White vinyl 7-inch. If anybody's allergic to scratch and sniff blueberry, does somebody have me on tape doing the disclaimer? Well, be careful if you're going to the West End, because... So I start second-guessing myself. I'm like, what are you doing, Martin? What are you doing? Father of three, your fucking wife's pregnant, and what are you doing now? Oh, scratch and sniff a blueberry 7-inch? Grow the fuck up! But it turns out Starbucks just spent, I don't know, 6 months and how many millions of dollars researching the smell they could put on the copies of USA Today that they put underneath the door of hotels like this that would make people spend the most money. Turns out to be blueberry. So maybe I'm not such an idiot after all. And next day, I read that Omni International Hotels have copyrighted a smell for their lobby. It's a little bit ginger, a little bit lemongrass, a little bit home. So, what is this all about? Am I selling you this stuff? I just fucking gave it to you. Right? Got it. This fuckhead is selling blueberry muffins. Actually, no, I'm not selling blueberry muffins. I'm giving blueberry muffins away. You want to talk crazy? Crazy bastard starts throwing it. Yeah, no. He's throwing blueberry muffins. Is there security? So what? What are we doing then? Well, maybe later tonight, you'll be up in the room. You'll be like, get my dealer on the phone. Not that dealer. I need a fucking muffin. A fucking muffin. He's not there. He's got what he wants. He's got pills. No. I want a four-pack of muffins. Like little... You'll end up at some bakery. It's closed. Kick the door in. Smash the door. Maybe, as you come out of the bakery, You'll be in that blueberry muffin rave. I'll be outside the door with these little, like a wet nap. $10 each, guaranteed to get the blueberry off your face. Yes, it is a high price to pay, but you're looking at 3 years or $10 for the... Maybe, as anybody... Yeah, oh, don't wait for me, just dive in. Maybe I'm going to fuck with the recipe. So you're like, yeah, blueberry muffins. Bit dry. Yeah, you want some milk? $10 a glass. Special souvenir system, souvenir glass. The only reason I am here, Ken doesn't like me. He just wants some fucking blueberry muffins. See? It worked. It worked. That's it. That's my shit. Thank you. Does somebody have the other one of these?
The paper bag?
There's one up here.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Martin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ken.
Okay, thanks. All right. Parallels, connections between what you do and what Martin does. Something must have occurred to somebody. Who's got the microphone? Ready to run it? You've got your hand up. Why don't you just go ahead so we don't... Are you just, you're saying that you've got the microphone? Okay. Parallels? I saw 100, and if you didn't, wow. Well, it's okay if you didn't, but that's an area of your brain you need to grow. Yes? Check on that microphone. We got Robert Middleton and then our friend, Lenny Goodman.
Combining one thing, adding it to another, making a special offer. So I have a manual on marketing, and then I have a website toolkit and stuff, and I put it together. I call it the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
People love to buy the whole shebang. And I just created a big kahuna. Anyone else got ideas for names like that?
Excellent.
You know, just something that sort of sticks out.
And it makes a big dollar difference, doesn't it?
The full Monty.
The full Monty. Lenny.
Every product is an experience. For us, it's just a product, but for the customer, it's an experience.
Everybody hear that? Could you say that again? Because that is so important.
For us, every product that we sell is just a product.
Right, it's just something in a box. We got to get it out the door, run the cash register, next. But how about the person on the receiving end?
For our customer, it's an experience. So what can we do to leverage, add to, enhance, enrich the experience through all the ways that Martin describes? Fabulous. So very exciting.
Great, thank you. Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, think of yourself when you buy something. You know how much it means to you. And it's so easy to forget that when you're on the other side. Yes.
The aiming low, getting high.
I love that. Yeah.
It was right on the numbers with what I do as far as just getting the girls to come in and try out.
Mm-hmm.
So if our base is saying, okay, we need 11 girls to field, then if we get 20 girls to show up for practice, yes.
Right.
And so it's the same with getting a product. You know, you just aim at the first. Maybe 10, 12 people that are going to buy and just slowly build on that is the stepping stones towards getting that $100,000 paycheck.
And you know this because you went from a team that was losing money in a culture where every team loses money and it's okay to a team that's actually making money. And you did it how? One brick at a time.
Right, one person.
Yep. Martin has one that I wrote down in New Orleans that he didn't say here, which was... How can anything be beneath you when you're at the bottom? You know, and you know, maybe for some of us, we're doing okay, but you know, we've got employees that we'd like to coach, or younger family members that we'd like to coach, and everybody has this attitude about what they won't dirty their hands doing. It's beneath them. well, unless, you know, if you're on the bottom of things, you should be willing to do everything and anything. The other thing I loved was develop the skill of developing, acquire the skill of acquiring skills. This is particularly important in the internet business. So many guys will sell the fantasy, outsource it, get a vendor. Oh, you'll find somebody else that can do that. You may wait your whole life before you make a dime with that attitude. I think you really need to learn how to do as much of your core business as you possibly can yourself, then get somebody to come in afterwards. But the idea that you're going to sit there never having created a business and you're just going to push buttons on your table and someone's going to appear and be a crackerjack webmaster and someone's going to appear and be a crackerjack PPC, you know, pay-per-click person, and someone's going to appear and be a crackerjack SEO person. How many people have heard that fantasy? It's baloney. How many people have made, you know, don't brag or anything, how many people have made real money and been the guy that swept the floor and emptied the waste paper baskets? Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Who else has got,
there are two things, really, I want to talk about. One is the talent that you have. Now, you'll get to know me as a marketer, but I used to be a cartoonist. And we probably don't sell or give away any cartoons. So that was a pretty interesting thing. We kind of sold a couple of T-shirts last year with the cartoons, but we don't do it. And so all of you have skills, all of you have abilities. You've got to recognize that you've got those skills and abilities, and the quicker you start to put that on posters and little giveaways, the quicker you're going to start to get your customers interested in those skills and abilities because they start to relate to you one-on-one. Now, let's assume that you actually don't have any skills and abilities, which is impossible. What we also do is we sell products that are worth $2,500, $3,500. We ship them by mail. And we sell quite a few of them. And what we also put in those products is, we live in New Zealand, so we have kiwi chocolate. And it costs $2 for the kiwi chocolate, just $2. So let's assume you don't have any skills and products or abilities. Go to your supermarket and pick up something that's absolutely unique to your state, your city. Put it in the box. You know, when we meet those clients, when we do meet them or when they email us, here it is. They bought a $3,500 product. What do you think they're asking for? That's right, more chocolate. Can you send us more chocolate? I mean, Renuka's my wife. You know, just the two of us around the company. Essentially, we've got chocolate bars that we, you know, a large part of our luggage to the U.S., we're not carbon friendly. It's chocolate, kiwi chocolate, because you can't get it here. So we're sending stuff to Sacramento, we're sending it to somewhere else, and they want $2 chocolate. So there you have it.
Great. Thank you. That was a pretty exciting presentation, huh, Sean? Okay. All right. Well, we could talk a lot about this, but the point is so many connections. A lot of what Martin's discovered through his path is just classic old school direct mail, believe it or not. You know, put weird stuff. Everybody ever learned in direct mail to put something strange and unusual in the mail package, and it just something that otherwise wouldn't be opened suddenly is opened and remembered. Let's give it another round of applause. That was quite a talk.